This segment of the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast is sponsored in part by Dark Horse Tackle. Go to darkhorsetackle.com and use promo code BKB5 to save an extra $5 when you build your own box. Douglas Outdoors, serious rods for serious anglers. Norsk Lithium. The lithium kayak battery you need is just a click away. Go to norsklithium.com. Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all three national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com and use promo code BKB5 to save 5% on your next online purchase. What is going on, everyone? Hope you're all having a great day. What is it today? Thursday, February 1st, first day of February. January kind of sucked for me because I didn't do a lot of fishing. I didn't do a lot of fishing because it was kind of cold and a lot of work. I actually did go over the weekend. I went to Broken Bow with friends and family. We had a great time. I didn't go bass fishing. I mainly stayed at the Beaver Bend, which is kind of like the river below Broken Bow, and did some fly fishing for trout. I didn't catch anything on fly, but you know, after a couple of hours, I was like, yeah, no, I'm going back to a spring setup. And then I caught a bunch of trouts on a rat tail. It was fun. Took some friends of mine that love fishing, that are new to fishing in general. So it was fun. But yeah, haven't done a lot of bass fishing. Hope to get to do a little bit more in the month of February. No beer today. I do have some good old-fashioned Scotch whiskey. Which one is this one? Glen Scotch. I don't know if y'all can see it. I got the background on my blared on the show if you're watching on Facebook and YouTube, because my office is turning into a guest room right now. I got my mom visiting from Puerto Rico, so this is going to be her guest room. So just kicked out for a couple hours while I do this live show. If you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, feel free to ask questions to me or the guests. Let us know where you're watching from. If you do listen to our podcast on our MP3 format, we do appreciate it if you leave us a review in any one of those streaming platforms like Apple Podcasts. You can leave a review. You can put comments. Also, I think on Spotify, you can leave a review. And usually every episode has little questions or polls. You can leave your comments right there. We got Metal Jones Zachariah from Dark Horse Tackle. What's shaking? By the way, good segue into it. Always want to thank the sponsors to the podcast, North Lithium. They are from Minnesota. Great lithium battery company. I love them. I got three of them batteries. I power my GoPro. I power my phone using my quad log wireless charging head. I power two GoPros and my fish finder. I love those batteries. They come with the USB ports. You can charge your phone. You don't have to hardwire. Douglas rods, as always. They've been with me since the beginning. I love the rods. Again, new set of rods coming out. They are inexpensive rod. They're entry-level rods. They're going to be in that $99 range. And they're amazing rods. And, of course, they have the LRS lineup and their X-Matrix tournament lineup. Dark Horse Tackle. I started Dark Horse Tackle, started partnering up with Dark Horse Tackle in February. They have a monthly subscription box, but it's much more than that. They also have kind of like a website like Tackle Warehouse, but for small business companies here in the US. They have some great, hard to find, typical baits that you don't really get anywhere. Hard baits that are like crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, jerk baits that are hand-painted by artists. And I do mean artist. I mean, some of the artwork on some of these crankbaits and lipless crankbaits is amazing. There's also soft plastics, baits. There's a whole lineup of it. Go check them out. Dark Horse Tackle. If you go to the link on my bio, you can click the link. Use promo code BKB5. You can save $5 on your first monthly subscription box. And if monthly subscription is not your thing, no problem. You can use, you build your own box one time or how many times you want to build them, and use promo code BKB5 and save yourself $5. And of course, Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all major national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com. You can also use promo code BKB5 and save 5%. I also have Heath Pagan. Heath, this is he. Okay, so if you don't know Heath Pan, not Pagan, Panganiban. I hope I said it that right, Heath. He is the founder of Jack Tribe. I have a hoodie and I have a shirt with this pattern. I absolutely love it. I get compliments where I'm out at Costco or Walmart like an old man shopping. So thank you for tuning in, Heath. We really appreciate it. Go follow Heath Pani Pagan on Yak Tribe. I think he's on pretty much every social media platform out there. Anyways, let's bring in our guest, Andrew Fool. Andrew, how you doing, man?
Hey, good. How are you, man? It's been a while since I saw you last.
It's been a while, yeah. So
it's probably, well, you guys just had like a big ice storm down there a couple weeks ago, right? So it got cold. Not Buffalo cold, but it got cold. So
Funny when Texans complain and I'm part of it, of the cold weather, and I look at your reels and or stories on social media along with Bailey Eichbrett, and you're like, what were you, like 2-3 feet of snow?
We got 86 inches in 2 days.
Holy crap, 86 inches. We got less than 1/8 of an inch of snow.
Yeah, that, like, so for instance, right, like we were supposed to have the wild card game against the Steelers in Buffalo on that Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't, because I told, the stadium is literally 2.5 miles from my house. And all these people are complaining, like, you know, outdoor stadium, the game needs to go on. Literally, you could not see, like, when you went outside. I took a selfie, and I think I even put it on my story. It was snowing so hard in my selfie that you could hardly see myself. Like, it was insane. We had like 50 to 70 mile an hour winds with 5 to 6 inches per hour of snowfall when that Sunday game was supposed to kick off against the Steelers. And they were able to get the entire town cleaned up, state of emergency removed. So 80 plus inches of snow all in the general area of the stadium, and hold a football game on Monday afternoon, like less than 24 hours after a massive area in our region got 80 plus inches of snow. So yeah, it's, and you guys have been shut down for a week.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. We're not used to it. I'll be honest with you, that it wasn't that bad. And I don't think a lot, we joke about, not a lot of people complain. When it gets like 3 inches of snow here, it's Armageddon, like literally. Because we don't have that lake effect that you have over there, you know, with the big lakes. So you get more of little powdery snow. Over here, it's just sleet and it's horrible to drive. And logistically, we're not prepared for that kind of weather because it only happens like once every 5-10 years.
Right.
But regardless, Andrew, you tell us a little bit about yourself. So I know you have wear multiple hats. You pretty much, all your job is related to fishing. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much at this point, right? So, like, see, I'm the co-host on the Sirius Angler Network, as you mentioned, with Bailey Eichbrett. I'm also the host of the Lure Lab, which is a part of the Sirius Angler Network. And all we do is talk about fishing lures and how to fish them and how to put more bass in the boat, kayak, or the bank for entry-level anglers all the way to professionals. We interview all the top pros in the game. They come on and give little insights and juicy tips on how to proficiently fish bait better. And then my personal background outside of the podcast, I'm a full-time fishing guide for smallmouth and largemouth bass on Lake Erie in the Finger Lakes. And I also guide for steelhead or Andrenomerus migrating lake run trout and salmonoid species in the Great Lakes from Lake Erie to Lake Ontario. And they run up the streams from about middle of October until May. And there's some blend in with my guiding schedule when we do that. But overall, I fish about 300 days a year. So we're always on the water. We're always working. We're just having a time with life.
Is it as glamorous as we dream it is to have a job full time in fishing?
Absolutely not.
What's the worst part about it that people don't get? People that dream about it like myself, but not actually get to do it.
To be like truthfully honest, the lack of sleep.
Really?
By about week, well, let's say like from the end of April until about the 10th of July, I have 3 days off. Scheduled days off. One, my daughter graduates from UPK, so I had to take a day off for that. One is Mother's Day, and the other one is Father's Day. So those are my 3 days off from about April, I think, 15th until July 10th. So this is being on the water every morning at 5 a.m. So I have to be up at 4 to get in the boat, drive to the ramp, because sunrise is about 6. Fish until 2, 3 o'clock. Get off the water, get all my tackle organized for the next day, come home, put the boat in the driveway, hang out with my family, go back out, finalize everything in the boat after they go to bed, and then usually do a podcast at night. So I go to bed about 11 o'clock midnight, and I'm up at 4 every day.
Wow. What do you enjoy most about it, though? What's the most rewarding part about it? Other than catching fish, of course.
Oh, like the catching fish part is great. It's actually seeing like clients grow and their knowledge grow throughout the day, because we try to be more educational based than just dragging live bait on the bottom for smallmouth bass and stuff, right? Like, yeah, we use some eggs for steelhead or fly fish, whatever my clients want to do, which is fun. And that's an entirely different endeavor. But with smallmouth, I am 100% artificial only, along with largemouth. And it's all about like telling clients where to cast, how to present the lure properly, how to shake your drop shot or dead stick it, messing around with forward facing sonar, reading sonar imaging on my Hummingbird units. I almost said Lowrance units. I had Lowrances on my last boat. And yeah, just a whole overall experience. And then clients leaving at the end of the day, really happy. And sometimes I go home with a headache, but you can tell that story.
Yeah, I was going to mention that I'm surprised that you don't say like the worst part about it is getting, you know, hit upside the head with a half ounce jig.
I've only ever been hit once.
Really? Is it? It was me, right? That's the only time. That's the only time. I have a hard time believing I'm the only client. The
only time that I've been hit by a lure.
All right. So let's tell that story. So because in my defense, and I have video proof of it,
there was a lot going on that day.
We were catching, but we get to a point with that midday low where we're not really catching that much. Yeah. And I hook into, I think, something like a 19-inch smallmouth bass, right? Yeah. So I'm left-handed. I'm casting, you know, on my left side. Andrew's on my right side as I'm casting. And as soon as I hook up into that, we got it into the boat. We measured it. We took pictures. We had a great time, high fives, everything. Andrew moves to my left side, and I didn't even notice. Like, I was just on a zone. I'm like, all right, I got one. So and halfway through my cast, I realized you were there, and I'm like, no, I think I'm high enough. And, man, I got you right when I was launching that thing.
Dead square in the back of the head.
I saw the bird's nest on my reel. I'm like, what the heck?
Bullseye.
And I look at you, you're down on the floor, and I'm like, holy crap.
I'm just glad it was the back of my head and not like the side or my
face. Or that I didn't have a jerk bait.
Oh, yeah, that would have hurt really bad. That would have been an expensive hospital trip. So,
and you would have shortened.
If it was in my hand, we would get it out, but I don't know about the back of the head. So,
yeah, no, it was, I still feel bad about that.
Fine. In 4 years, right? Like, I've had one hook in my hand, which was my own doing, and guiding, and one chatterbait to the back of the head.
There you go.
I've been hit by like other baits, like on set hooks and come flying at me, and I kind of move, but never on a full on cast.
Yeah, and I was like chucking it. Like, I went, oh, yeah, like,
you had to blowing 40, so like you had to throw it hard. I don't blame you for throwing it hard. I don't blame you for hitting me. I shouldn't have been where I was. So it's my own fault. I just get all excited. I want to see what's going on. And then whack, I'm down on the carpet of my boat. Oh, well.
Yeah.
We're alive. No, no, No harm done besides a big goose egg for about 4 days, but we're here. No resentment.
It, I can tell you really ring your bell right there. When it hurt.
I saw stars for a couple seconds, but no, we're good, man. And I think you caught one a couple casts later, and then we had you're trying to convince me. I don't know if you remember this one. You're trying to convince me to stay out longer as that thunderstorm was bearing
down on
us. And we literally had like seconds.
I give you a lot of credit. So the whole story was this, and I mentioned this last year after I got back on the podcast, is the whole point of this. I used to have foster child Roger used to live with us when he was 12 years old. He lost his dad before. Like him when he was 1 or 2 years old. His mom was in and out of the hospital for the longest time. So we stepped in so he can stay with us and wouldn't go into foster care. Him and his sister. His sister, Cassandra, is already married. She got married last year, at the end of last year. I don't remember crying as much as I did on her wedding just because I view her as my daughter. And then Roger graduated last year. Time flies. So he graduated last year. And I told him, okay, I'm going to take you fishing. And he didn't have his passport. I actually wanted to take him to the Amazon or something place exotic, but he didn't have his passport. So I was like, all right, let's just go to upstate and search smallmouth bass, you know, because I know he's going to love it. And I didn't want him to be stuck where, you know, spend hours without fishing. So I wanted to get a guide in. I knew Andrew was a great guide.
I appreciate that.
So, and Bailey spoke highly of you as a fishing guide. So we decided to go up to Buffalo.
That's scary. That's scary that Bailey spoke highly of me. No. I love that kid. He's good. He's good people.
He had a great reel the other day that I shared. I think something along the lines of positive mental attitude and the grind of like being a content creator, how sometimes, you know, it feels like you work at your own pace, but at the same time, it can be very obsessive for very little in return. And there's times, and I've experienced that, where you kind of like not paying enough attention to your family or to your own health or to your own and forget to have fun out there fishing, which is why
we're all guilty of that, man. We're all guilty, especially me, right? Like being on the water and fishing is my livelihood for me and my family. Like I am a full-time guide, a podcast host, a co-host, a social media content creator for my personal page.
Insta model.
For Lure Lab, it just I don't stop. Like, and I tie my own flies for steelhead too, like so, and jigs and stuff. So I'm constantly doing stuff, tinkering with tackle, trying to see what's better, like reading and that. But I have like one thing I have been doing almost when my kids get home from school, they get home at like 3 or 4:30, depending on the day. The phones go away, right? Like for 2 hours of time, like I'll have it on me, but 2 hours of my day is devoted strictly to my family, just to try to push everything off to the side and just dive in and spend as much time as I can with them, because ultimately that's what makes us happy, right? Being with our loved ones. So if I can take a break from the world and let it slow down a little bit, life is much easier.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. And I think that applies to anything anybody does, whether it's like, I don't know, bow hunting or drag racing or anything that you know, that tickles your fancy and you're obsessed with, it applies to all of it. That's a great part about it. But one of the things that I've learned with searching smallmouth in upstate New York is really interesting. Like the weather was, there was like 40 mile per hour winds. We couldn't really go to the lake like we were planning to. So we stayed at the Niagara River. I've always felt that I'm a good angler. Like I know what I'm doing, but 99% of the time I'm in a kayak. Like every once in a while, I have a friend invite me to go to their bass boat and I'll fish out of the bass boat.
Right.
But I really, in that, you know, searching for species that we don't normally search for in Texas, fishing a river with strong currents, doing a lot of drifting, I felt like really out of my element. Like I was embarrassed. I'm like, I feel like I'm reverted back to my first time ever fishing until I got kind of like my, you know, the legs under me. Yeah. And then I was like, all right, now I kind of get what I'm doing. But it's very, very, very different from the bass fishing that we do here in Texas. One of the things that I noticed, we saw one kayaker kind of fishing out of the bank, but really it's like, I look at it as like, this is only bass boat fishing. Like I can't think of a kayak angler, like even in protective coves where you don't protect it for the wind, you still have to deal with like, what's the miles per hour or the knots on the current on the Niagara River? Because like, there's no way you can pedal you and stay in one spot for more than 5 minutes.
It's tough to say. Like, it depends on where you're at. Where we were, the current there is probably on average of a brisk walking pace, right? It's probably like 2.5 to 3 miles an hour. There's other sections of that river that we didn't even go near where it's like 4.5, 4.75. Like, if I remember correctly, and you can't quote me on this, but I do believe the Niagara Falls is close to 1 million cubic feet per second.
Oh, so bad.
It's like, I forgot what the equivalent of it is, but it's like, I think it's like 200,000 gallons of water per second that flows over, or something insane, or 200 million gallons of water. Like, I don't know the exact science on it, but it's a lot of water. It's,
yes,
like it's the size of a small lake wide, and it runs for about 9 miles at 3 miles an hour. And there's nowhere to hide from that current unless you go into a small dock, like boat dock, marina, or there's a couple like man-made canals. And then the Erie Canal, the world famous Erie Canal, kind of flows out of the Niagara River. So you can get back in there and hide from some current, too. But there's still a lot of current there as well.
Let me check my audio here. I got a message. I can't really see the messages from Instagram until I look at it. But somebody was telling me that my voice is not coming over right. Maybe it's just Instagram. Arnie, I appreciate you, the feedback. I just saw your message, so thank you. Not sure. It says it's all right here. But can you hear me all right, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. I hear you loud and clear. It sounds great.
Might be on Instagram. One of the things that I found interesting with smallmouth bass, when fighting for those, you know, a fish that is traditionally known for like how hard they fight, and then you add that, you know, like that strong current, it's like you have to get used to like you're going to lose a lot of fish. Like we caught a bunch of fish, but we also lost a lot of fish. And I know from experience, I know when I don't set the hook, like there was one time I actually missed when that fish kind of jumped out of the water, didn't set the hook. But a lot of times, like, man, I felt like that was a strong hook set, but I'm fighting a fish that is mean, strong, and plus he has this strong current on his advantage. It is really like frustrating how much fish you lose.
Yeah, and a lot of the things with current, too, is like rod angle. How much tension do you have on the line? How much load do you have in the rod as you're fighting the fish, playing the fish to the current? So, like, there's a lot that has to go right for you to get those fish in. And it's more than just setting the hook and reeling. What's up, Mike? It's a very intricate process to land a smallmouth in 3 mile an hour current, especially when you're catching them around the 4 to 5 pound range, and when they're eating poppers and topwater and chatterbaits. Like, some of those bites are just unreal, and they hit it so hard that I feel like sometimes we just rip big holes in their mouths, and as soon as they start shaking, the hooks come out. So there's definitely a fine, delicate line that we play when we fight those fish in that current.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that also attracted me to that style of fishing was, it would seem boring, but it's really not. And it was just that drifting with either, I forgot the name of that.
I don't even think we drifted drop shot that much.
Not a lot, but like drop shot. And what's the other one? I keep forgetting, which has a little thing.
I think we're fishing a tube, maybe a little bit of
tubes. There we go. Fishing with tubes, yeah.
But like a majority of our damage came on a little swim bait, a topwater, and a chatterbait. So like,
yeah.
we were well versed those couple days that we went out and caught a bunch of fish. Well, you guys caught a bunch of fish.
So. And I was gonna say my favorite part of it, the whole idea was to take Roger for his graduation and him to have fun. And he caught a ton of fish. My favorite one was like being a teenager, they get tired easily. Like he didn't have his sea legs under him by day two. Halfway through the day, he cast out, then he falls asleep on the deck. All the while he has a 19-inch smallmouth bass.
That was right before the thunderstorm. That was chaos, right? Like it was going down for like 30 minutes, like every cast. And they were all big ones. And then all of a sudden, like flipped like a light switch. And I looked at my radar and I was like, we gotta go. And you're like, no. I'm like, no, we gotta go. Like we're gonna get
wet. It was bad.
It's not gonna be good.
I wish I could share it on Instagram. I had the clip on Instagram, but I'm on my Instagram. I think it's doing the live thing, so I don't know if you can share it. But it was funny because the storm was coming, and I was like, no, let's just go up a little bit north, and it'll go. We can just, stay out right at the edge of it. And you're like, no, we got to go. And sure enough, it was like we left right at the nick of time. We were – how fast are we going to the boat ramp?
Oh, we did 70, buddy. We let it eat. We were going with the current. So we had my Camus wide open. And I think I tied it off, ran and got my truck and trailer, and got the boat loaded in like 30 seconds. And as soon as we got out of the water, the 70-mile-an-hour winds hit, like instantly. It's like we had somebody watching over us to get back to that boat ramp in time and get the boat out of the water, because I was terrified my boat was going to sink in the boat ramp.
No, it was bad. And Roger was just scared out of his mind when that thing we were just hauling ass back to the boat ramp. But yeah, that's the whole thing. Like you're like, okay, let's back up. We got to go. And Roger gets up from sleeping on the deck. He's reeling his spin cast. And all of a sudden he has this 19-inch smallmouth bass just tied at the other end. God knows for how long that he didn't even notice.
It was jumping before he set the hook. Like, I'm like, dude, that fish is – you got a fish. He's like, huh? I was like, just real. You got one. And the thing was down its throat. I was like, oh, my gosh. That was fun. It was a good couple days. It was a riot.
We gave Roger a hard time, but I think it was a good rite of passage for him to kind of like have that
experience. Yeah, he got spoiled. Yeah,
he got spoiled, definitely.
So, but to Mike's question, right? He asked, do you ever have trouble getting smallies to bite a jackhammer? He tends to go to the mini-max when chasing smallies, right? Like, the mini-max is an incredible, incredible smallmouth chatterbait. I put, like, a 2.8 swimmer on it or a 3-inch swimmer, a smaller one, and you will get a lot of fish. What I have found, though, is with the jackhammer in 3/8 or 1/2 ounce, I am targeting bigger fish than the ones that would normally eat a mini max. Like, I want something that's 17 to 22 inches, like 3.5 to 5 pounds. And a lot of times I find that they get it really well. And even though they're Great Lake smallies that we're catching on them, the river fish tend to have bigger mouths and they tend to be more streamlined and more aggressive. So when they get it, they usually get it really well. When I'm chasing Lake Erie smallmouth, which are only like 3 miles away from where we were fishing up shallow, burning a chatterbait, I'll actually go to the mini max because the Lake Erie ones tend to be more round, a little bit sluggish, a little bit slower, and they have smaller mouths. So they have a harder time getting that jackhammer. But river fish, they tend to have bigger ones for whatever reason, bigger mouths. And I find that when they eat it, when they want a chatterbait, they're going to eat it. They don't care. They'll get it in their gullet. So
yeah,
no, I don't really have too much trouble. It's just either they're on it or they're not.
There you go, Mike. I had fun catching them with the jackhammer. Like we were catching them on drop shot. Yeah, we catch them a lot on drop shot and twos. But I was like, I kind of want to throw a power bait. As soon as we started throwing a power bait, it worked out great. It was amazing. Yeah. It's interesting. One of the things that I learned about it, it's one thing to watch a content creator on YouTube or a podcaster talk about it, and it's another thing to watch it. And one of the things that I've heard about it and I've learned through other people, but I got to experience this. When you throw a, for example, the chatterbait we're throwing out at that grass line at that school, you know, we would have like something between 5 and 10 bass follow that bass that actually hit the jackhammer that we're trying to reel in. And you think, okay, let's just keep throwing it out there. But I guess it, I mean, every lake is different. Every geographical, you know, area is different. What I noticed on that is they will spread out. You have to give them like 15 minutes and then they'll go back to the same spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where a lot of times I think here in Texas, you catch them, you can throw back in there. They'll be right back in there. But I think a lot of it has to do with that current, because it's just a strong current. And that's why I think, in my opinion, I'm not a biologist, but I mean, those smallmouth bass are so strong. One of it is because it's kind of misleading in a way, because you're not just finding the bass, you're also finding the current. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that current, those bass are 24/7 swimming. I imagine they're swimming even when they're sleeping. Like, yeah, oh, there's sure nonstop, they so they're all muscle.
Well, what makes that spot is so unique, though, is right. So where we were in spot lock, if we went 100 yards east, there's no current. And it's a big shell bar that's like 2 to 8 foot deep and there's a lot of grass. And I've learned over the summer, like last couple of years, I knew where that school smallmouth was. They're always there. So like that's one of the honey holes I'll go to when I'm in a tournament or when I'm guiding or even fun fishing. I always get bit there. But in October, I was practicing for a tournament. I knew it was going to be river only. I took a lot of time learning more of that area. And I found that there's actually like depressions and ditches in that area that we were fishing that takes them up into the shallow area. And I was actually catching them on top and on the other side, following those depressions around. And there's just fish everywhere. So I think when they pull off, they actually slide up onto that flat to get reprieve from the current. And then when they want to feed, they come back out into that current. And there's some boulders and some rock. And so the nice thing about current is almost never will you find just a straight, flat, smooth bottom, right? Like there's little depressions and waves that might be 6 inches or a foot or even 3 inches, or there could be a boulder and there'll be a nice depression there. Those are all areas that give these fish basically a hideout, a place that they can rest and relax. And when you can figure out how the grass line relates to that boulder and you make that exact cast, you're going to get bit because the smallmouth is always going to bite 99% of the time. If you present something properly to a smallmouth, it will bite if it's yes. in the mood to bite.
Yeah. Daniel asked the question, what's up, guys? What's the topic for today? Today, we're talking about the Northeast fishing experience. Andrew is a fishing guide, among other things, in the Buffalo area and up in upstate New York. So we're talking about that, not just for bass fishing. We'll talk a little bit about fly fishing and trout in a minute, but just to catch you up on that. Mike M says, I'm convinced that the rivers have large tails. That's true. River fish, I'm sorry, have larger tails and genetically built, have a little bit different than the lake fish. That makes sense, right? Like they have to fight the current.
It's funny, like genetically speaking, they're exactly the same fish, but they're a product of their environment.
Yeah.
So genetically speaking, they are T for T completely the same strain of fish from Lake Erie to the Niagara River. And that goes for like any smallmouth throughout the country, except for like two or three random ones that are slightly genetically different. But a smallmouth is a smallmouth bass, but it's a product of its environment. So like lake fish tend to be more blimp or football shape with smaller mouths and a little bit smaller tails. And you've seen on like the Elite Series, these fish that are like 20 inches around and 21 inches long, they just look like a blimp. Well, river fish, they live in current. So they're more streamlined. They're more arrow-like. They're more aerodynamic. And then they'll have a huge tail on them, which allows them to propel themselves through the water to hunt and chase down bait. So, I mean, they look different, but genetically
they're the same. Yeah.
They're just a product of their environment that they live in.
And I think one of the things that I've learned is it's not that they, in a way, they evolved. But I think the point what I'm trying to make is like, if you have a smallmouth bass, right, on the river that doesn't have that, for whatever reason, genetically, the tail never, you know, grew to the size of the normal or bigger smallmouth bass in that river, they're going to struggle. And eventually, they're going to struggle to eat. They're going to struggle to mate. And eventually, they get, what's the word that I'm looking for? You know, if they're not able to mate because they can't move as well, they eventually gradually disappear. And the ones that are more adapted to that area are the ones that are going to reproduce, and therefore their genes get passed
down. Survival of the fittest.
Yeah, survival of the fittest. That's a great point. Well, speaking of survival of the fittest, one of the, when we're talking about the Northeast fishing experience, which is what this title is all about, I think of it as not just bass fishing. If I'm going on vacation like I did going to Buffalo, it's also the experience of the, you know, the touristy part of it. I can't remember the small town where I stayed off, but it was a beautiful small town.
Oh, yeah, you stayed in Hamburg.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, Hamburg. So, which is the little town that I live in. It's one of the safest neighborhoods, actually, in all of the United States.
It is beautiful.
It's a very quiet. So how can I appropriate what Hamburg is in totality, right? So Hamburg is it's a very conservative town, but it's also a very trendy and upcoming town. So there's a good mix of both trendy and past is great. So like the town of Hamburg puts on a lot of events where like family gatherings, family movie nights, family concert nights. Like they do Halloween parades where everyone in the town comes out and there's no floats or cars. It's just the people walking down the street in a personal parade, right? Like, so like it's a very homey town. It's really a great place. And it's about 15 minutes south of the city of Buffalo. And the best part about our area is probably the food, besides the fish.
Yes.
We have so much good food.
It was amazing. So talking about the little town, like what's the name of that town again?
Hamburg.
Hamburg. It was quaint. The town square is like beautiful. It's green, a lot of greenery. Not big buildings, not a big town hall, but it's just small and quaint. And the food was amazing. We went to a pizza place over there, one of the best pizza I've ever tasted.
Some Blaisdell, coffee shops. Right? Did you go to Blaisdell? Yeah.
Yes, I think it was amazing. The town square is beautiful. They had the county fair that weekend that we were there, that we were there. And I loved it. Also, Niagara Falls. I had gone to Niagara Falls before, but Roger's the first time I had seen Niagara Falls. I don't know how impressive that is. Roger was blown out of his mind, you know, like an 18-year-old watching Niagara Falls for the first time. He was not prepared to see that. And it was cool to watch him just be in awe and amazement of Mother Nature. Because if you've never been to Niagara Falls, it is impressive. And the town of Niagara is very nice, though. Yeah. Especially the Canadian side, for whatever reason, it's a lot more developed and a lot nicer. We couldn't go that there because Roger didn't have a passport.
Didn't have a passport, yeah. Canada, they put a lot of money into the development of the Canadian side of Niagara Falls. It's also the much better view of the falls, honestly. Yeah. If you're next time you come up, you have to go to the Canadian side. But they put a lot of money into the little town over there in Niagara Falls, Ontario. But it's a huge, huge drinking and party district. So
it's very touristy.
And then our side is very run down. It's all old factories. And then there's a couple little nice areas. But if I had to choose what side that I want to hang out on, I'd probably take the Clifton Hill area of Niagara Falls, Ontario.
It's really nice. It's really, really nice. Now, going back to the food, like when we stayed in Buffalo, I don't know how the rest of the United States has not caught up with this. We all caught up with buffalo wings, which we'll touch on that because I just found out it's not buffalo wings in Buffalo. It's another thing, but we'll touch on that. But how is it that buffalo wings are so popular, which they deserve to be? They're amazing, but roast beef on a weck? How is that not a thing in the rest of the United States?
Yeah.
Tell everyone who doesn't know what that is. Please tell them, because the rest of the United States needs to catch up on this amazing sandwich. Screw, yeah, and I don't care if anybody's from Philly's watching. I apologize. Anybody's from Philadelphia's watching. Philly cheesesteaks is the most overrated sandwich ever. It has nothing.
Depends on the roast beef. Where you get a Philly cheesesteak from? It depends on where you get a Philly cheesesteak from. If you go to Philly,
not in Texas,
you go to like Geno's or one of like the famous places. They're not good. You have to go to like that little pizza shop and you'll get the best Philly cheesesteak. You have to find the ones that aren't on like the top 10 places to visit in Philadelphia, and you'll have the best cheesesteak of your life. We visit Philadelphia not regularly, but we have some friends down there. So we go to Philly probably once in a blue moon. I think me and my wife have gone a couple times now. It's a fun city, not my favorite place to visit, but good food scene, some good Mexican restaurants, great cheesesteaks if you know where to look. But back to the beef on weck, right? The beef on weck.
Yes.
It is a hand-carved piece of beef at a carver station on a Kimmel weck roll, which is basically a salty, delicious Kaiser roll, basically in a short term, dipped in au jus, slapped together. It's about this big, and it's dripping with au jus off the side of it, and you top it with horseradish, and it's delicious.
It is amazing. The great thing about it is it doesn't have any fixings. Like, it doesn't, maybe I'm wrong, but the ones that I've tasted, there was no cheese, there was no ketchup, there was no mustard, there was no lettuce, tomato, pickle. It was just beef. What it is, beef on a weck, which is the bread.
Usually the way that it's served is you have your beef on weck sandwich, and then you'll get some like homemade chips that go on the side, a cup of horseradish that you can choose how much you want to put on. So basically the idea of horseradish is if you have a lot of congestion in your nose, you just eat a big glop of it and you'll clear all of your sinuses out. And then a pickle.
Not a fan like of horseradish.
Like a big long pickle spear on the side. And that's usually what a beef on weck is. And it's incredible.
I don't know why I know why buffalo wings are popular, and rightfully so. I don't know how beef on weck is not popular. I don't get it. It is amazing. Amazing. Yeah, if you ever go to Buffalo, please, you recommended that place. It's like a sports bar.
Barbell.
That actually make Barbell. Their own roast beef. What was the name of it?
Yeah. Barbell.
Barbell. It was amazing. There's a Barbell. Bunch of places. Now, going back to Buffalo Wings, like we call
Can
it
you stop Buffalo calling Wings. Them Buffalo Wings.
Exactly. That. Please, I'll let you take over now. On that note, I'll let you take over.
So, like, you know, we're from Buffalo. They're chicken wings. Buffalo is the home of the chicken wing. And the way it came about is butchers way back in the day were throwing out the chicken wings on chicken. It was a useless piece. But then I believe the story is during the Great Depression, somewhere around that time, they're like, well, why are we throwing out this scrap meat? Let's try to cook it and see what we can come up with. Well, apparently they threw it in a big bowl of grease that was hot and developed a chicken wing. So that came about the creation and establishment of Anchor Bar, which is a good place if you want to go to a touristy chicken wing stop. So I will tell you to go there if you're in Buffalo. It's not the best, but it's the home of the chicken wing. And it's Buffalo sauce. I don't know where places decide to come up with the name Buffalo sauce, probably because chicken wings were invented in Buffalo. But in Buffalo, we have hot, medium, mild. Those are buffalo sauces for everyone who's wondering. And then we have like barbecues, spicy barbecues, hot barbecue charred. We have like garlic parm, lemon pepper. There's Thai chili. There's about 70 different 70 different chicken wing flavors you can get depending on which chicken wing establishment you go to. And don't eat boneless wings. We eat chicken wings with the bones in them.
Yeah, I found that out too. And they all, you know, as advertised, like they are amazing. Like the place you recommended, we ordered some wings and some beef.
Did you get the lemon pepper ones from?
Yes, those are my favorite ones. Yeah.
Oh yeah. They're great. Do not get their hot ones with, I forgot what it was. There's a lemon pepper, and then there's like a spicy one that they have. Do not get spicy with lemon pepper. It intensifies the spicy. Just so
you know. The pepper.
I love it, but for the random person going there, don't get spicy with lemon pepper. But the lemon pepper is incredible.
No, it is. I mean, there's some. I was blown away by how good the food scene was there. Like, I'm one of those guys that I don't go unless I have no other choice. You're not going to catch me at, and no disrespect, but you're not going to catch me at a Chili's. You're not going to catch me at Applebee's, certainly not an Applebee's. I don't do brown. Like, if I have some friends and, you know, we're hanging out inside after a bar to hit up a chain restaurant, fine. I'm not going to be an a-hole about it. But for the most part, I'd rather go to a mom-and-pop place or just a small business, small restaurant that's known for good food. And they're all over the Buffalo. Especially the town square.
Too, when you're in, did you hit the Grange when you're in Hamburg? The Grange, the little farm to table restaurant?
No.
Down like center Hamburg? Oh man, it's another good one.
I'll have to. I'm definitely. I mean, there's so many good places to eat down there in Hamburg.
Yeah.
So it definitely, if anybody that's watching or listening, if you go to Buffalo, first of all, contact Andrew. By the way, Andrew, where can people follow you? If somebody's interested in getting a guide service, whether it's first of all, where can people follow you and what type of service you provide?
So my Instagram and Facebook page is Full Fishing Guide Service. Pretty easy. It's my last name and then Fishing Guide Service. If you want to shoot me an email, it's the same thing, fullfishingguideservice@gmail.com. I also have a website. I believe it is fullfishingguide.com. I can text you the link to that, Armando, if you want later. Yeah, that's pretty much the easiest way. Yeah, that's
you can post it in the comments if you want.
Yeah, I can do that. I'm over here now. Let's see here. Oh, as I got out of the YouTube page on accident. But let me pull it back up here because I want to get the actual website. But yeah, that's the easiest way. If you send me a message, I'm very responsive. I don't ignore people. Even if you just have fishing questions, I answer them all. So I love interaction. I love talking to people. And there's my website right down in the comments as it loads here. But yeah, I love talking fishing. So don't hesitate ever to reach out. Lure Lab, Instagram page, Serious Angler, Instagram page. Like, I'm pretty much everywhere.
And other than smallmouth bass fishing, tell us again, what's the other type of fishing guide services you provide?
Okay, so we have largemouth fishing on the famous Finger Lakes. And then on top of that, from about middle of October when my bass season starts slowing down because it gets cold on the lake and a lot of big waves, from middle of October until about the beginning of April, I chase lake run rainbow trout, or as their migratory cousins from the Pacific would call them, steelhead. They're the same fish, genetically speaking. Just one lives in a freshwater body of water, i.e. Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, the Great Lakes, and the other ones and their cousins out west are ocean run that run up the river. And there are some other like minute details that make them completely different. Like some of the steelhead in British Columbia will actually live in a stream for 4 years, and our fish will go straight into the lake after about 6 weeks and then start coming back in at the age of about two until they're about eight. So they recur every year. They run up the streams to eat, spawn, reproduce, which is about 10% reproduction rate on all of Western New York streams. So very small amount of naturally reproduced fish. And we chase them all winter long trying to catch giant lake run steelhead. It's a ton of fun. And we have a trophy lake run brown trout fishery. We also have Chinooks or king salmon and cohos and Atlantics. So we have a bunch of different salmonoid and anadromous species, which is just a migratory fish.
Interesting. I would love to do the fly fishing thing for steelhead trout. And that's something that I always want to branch out. Yeah. I always kind of want to branch out and not just stick to one thing. I think there's a whole lot of other things that you can enjoy about bass, about fishing in general. Obviously, my go-to is always going to be bass fishing. But let me ask you this. Now, I usually tend to ask this to all my guests. or when I remember to ask them, like, what's your favorite thing to fish for? Smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, whatever it is.
So a little history on myself. I don't really have a favorite. I like catching fish, right? So graduating high school, at this point, I was a live bait fisherman. I love just catching whatever bit. I went with my neighbor growing up for many years, and my dad didn't really fish until I got into it through high school's kind of way, like we bonded, etc. Then kid from high school who was my friend at the time decided to get me into tournament bass fishing. And in a trade-off, I was huge into steelhead fishing at that time, and I didn't really know much about bass fishing. So we basically like traded knowledge. I taught him how to steelhead fish just to start off, and he taught me how to tournament bass fish. And it kind of like flipped after like 2 years of doing both all the time. I became like diehard bass fisherman, fully devoted, and kind of steelhead fished when I could on the weekends after tournament season was done, and if the weather was good and whatnot, or creek conditions were good enough to go out and fish without wasting a bunch of time. Now that we're here and I'm a full-time guide, I have an equal love for both bass and lake run fish because they're challenging in their own respect. And there's a lot of different ways that you can target bass, and there's a lot of different ways you can target lake run, steelhead, and brown trout. And I would say that I am not a master at all of them, but I know how to do just about every technique possible to target these fish, from float fishing hardware, like float fishing, like egg sacks and jigs, to throwing hardware for them, like little spoon spinners and basically like little Rapalas, to fly fishing with an indicator, bottom ticking fly fishing, and then spey fishing, which is throwing big like 3.5-4 inch flies on the wet fly swing. And I can do just about all of it pretty proficiently. And I'll just like my bass trips, my steelhead trips are also very educational based on kind of showing you why you're casting, where you're casting, how to present it to get bites. So if you ever come back and you want to go on your own, you can, or just keep hiring me, which I would love. So, but yeah, it's, I would say I have an equal love for both. I don't really have a favorite, but the favorite is depending on the season.
Yeah.
If it's summer, I want to be bass fishing because I can't steelhead fish and I'm not a troller, right? Like, I don't want to sit in a boat and troll baits behind the boat and hope something bites. I like to chase. So when I'm steelhead fishing, I hike 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 miles in a day sometimes looking for a couple fish to bite with my clients, or on the bass, we'll burn my gas tank to empty if the day is going awry trying to find them and make them bite.
So, I can attest to that.
We will find, you know, fish that will want to bite.
That's one of the underrated parts about hiring a guide. And I say I've hired guides in different occasions. Usually it's when I want to take somebody that has been begging me to take him bass fishing. And I feel like I'm not the best at teaching bass fishing. So I feel like I don't want you to waste your time. So I'm going to take you with somebody that's going to knows what they're doing. I've done that before here in Texas in Lake Fork with Dusty and Black. I did that with you when we went to Buffalo with Roger. And one of the things that I think it's more enjoyable and underrated part of it that nobody talks about is the learning experience. Like, again, I don't fish for smallmouth bass on rivers here in Texas. It's very rare that you can find smallmouth bass on rivers here in Texas. They get too warm, they die off. Usually you see them like big white rock reservoirs.
Well, Texoma, right? Like,
Texoma, Lake Whitney, Belton Lake, those are all kind of like, feels like highland reservoirs. What I mean by that, it's so just no grass, all rock and sandy and timber. So I learned a lot from you. And that's what I loved about it. It's like, man, I am not just you're not just telling me where to catch fish. You're actually teaching me this is why. And I got to learn from a lot of those baits that I didn't know about. Like that jackal jerkbait, I've never heard of that jackal jerkbait.
Oh, the re-range. Yeah, it's a good
one. That is an amazing bait. I watch you just, you know, catch him left and right with that jerkbait. And you always hear about the, for good reason, the, oh my God, the Vision 110 from Megabass. But yeah, that jackal thing, man, that is dynamite.
Yeah, and it's a flavor for the time of year, right? Like the re-range, and this is why I love my Lure Lab podcast, because we dive into all like the specifics of baits and techniques and what they do. The re-range isn't a jerk bait that you want to go and throw when the water's 45 degrees. It's an extremely erratic, fast chopping, slashing jerk bait. So you want the water warm. You want fish that are chasing, willing to move and go after something that's darting faster than ever, running away from them. It's where a 110 is a really good erratic darting jerk bait. But it also excels when the water temps are really cold, because it has a subtle but hard kicking action, to where the re-range is very choppy and kind of all over the place. Yeah. It has a completely different sound as well. And I'll let Bailey know, but I don't know if he'll have anything to say back to me, Mike. Sorry.
I don't know. Is that trash talking, or it's just I don't know what the, it says, hey Andy, let Bailey know ADK KBF is coming for the New York.
So ADK stands for the Adirondack Mountains, which is about 4 to 5 hours away from Buffalo, New York, but it's an absolutely breathtaking area. It's closer to St. Lawrence than it is where I'm at, Buffalo. Sorry, I apologize for the yawn. I was up early and was on the stream all day. So did not mean to do that.
No, you're good, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I know your schedule's super packed.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm off, so we're just having a time, right?
One thing that I noticed about Buffalo, going back to the touristy part about it, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, like the city itself, it really felt like, I've never been to Pittsburgh, but being referred to, you know, Pittsburgh as Steel Town, you know, and you see it when you watch, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers play and all that. Yeah. That it's usually, it's like this cold, hard place to live that is not necessarily beautiful, but you'll be proud to live there, because I don't know, it's not, I don't want to sound like I'm putting it down, because I'm not. It's just that at least the Buffalo, downtown Buffalo, and the kind of like steel factories, it just feels like if I lived there, I would be proud, because it seems like it's a rugged, tough town. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. It is a very blue collar, work very hard for what you got type town.
Yeah.
We have a couple different auto industry plants here. We have a Ford plant. We have two Chevy plants, two GM plants, I should say. So, like, we are an automobile town. We were built on the steel industry, like the 70s, 80s, felt the great collapse. And now the city is coming back. It's very revitalized. They're putting a lot of money into it, but it's turning more into white-collar financial IT type stuff. So Buffalo is having a resurgence, and it's growing rapidly at the moment. So it is really good for the area. The downside of that is the cost of everything is going up, because a lot of people want to move here. So I think we're going to start seeing like a phase out of the rugged, tough, going more into like the prim, proper, suity type living style that a lot of people in other big white collar financial cities go with, right? Like, and I embrace the toughness of Buffalo, like 80 inches of snow. One day it could be 70, the next day it's 20, and then we're back to 40. Like, smallmouth fishing, they're fighters, they're big, bad. We got awesome deer hunting. We have a ton of basically industrial workers in this area that are not phasing out yet, but will be phasing out shortly and being replaced. And I think the city is going to see a huge culture change when that happens, from what it is now to where it could be in 20, 30 years. But I am excited to see where it's going. If you came here 10 years ago, the city would look nothing like it looks like now. It was
it's nostalgia in a way, kind of like you said, you embrace the rugged, you know, hard fought life in a way that's there. Yeah. But I don't know, man. I always have like mixed feelings about the progress, right? Like you're proud of, you know, your steel town, a blue collar mentality, but you understand with, you know, with progress comes different things. Things eventually faded out. If never happened, we wouldn't have a wheel. Like, right? We would still be in the Stone Age. So it every generation just goes through progress and progress and progress. It is what it is. And it's definitely going to have its highs and lows. I think sometimes, not to make a sociopolitical comment out of this, but we see it because we live such short lives, you know, under 100 years. We see things in a perspective, but when you look at it throughout the course of human history, if things didn't change, they didn't progress, I mean, where would we be right now? Like, we wouldn't be having a podcast and talking about bass fishing, right? And talking about, you know, 11 bearing 9.8 speed reels, you know, and compound reels and rods or all that good stuff. Like, it the nostalgia is always there, and you hate to see things fade out, but at the same time, it's just progress. It is what it is.
Yeah. Progress is progress. All progress in the grand scheme of things, hopefully, is good progress. And yeah, I guess you could say it's hokey, but I mean, the revitalization has been going on for probably 10 years, 15 years, which is far before Hochul was here. They've done a lot of dumb investing into Buffalo that's really gotten no return to the state of New York. So I guess you can go that route. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, our socioeconomics and political mishaps of New York State literally do almost nothing for New York. A lot of our tax revenue throughout the entire state goes to New York City because it costs so much to make that massive area function, which is 8 hours away from where I live. Yeah. And that's one misconception, is I'm sure you, I don't know if you thought this or not, but a lot of people think New York State is New York City, and it is far from. There is New York State is one of the biggest states in the entire country by like surface land mass, right, in area. And we have two different mountain ranges. There's thousands of lakes, two Great Lakes. I believe we're the only state besides Michigan. So there's two states. No, Michigan might have three. So we have two Great Lakes. We have two massive river systems. We have the Finger Lakes. We have the Adirondack Mountains. We have Lake Champlain. We have the Catskills. We have Hudson Valley. We have the Western New York. We have grape farms, some insanely delicious wineries, like tons of hiking opportunities, outdoors, snowing, skiing, snowmobiling, snowboarding, ice hockey, football. Like, there is so much good in upstate New York that has nothing to do with New York City. It's insane. Like,
it's I've been to upstate New York plenty of times. I've been to New York City, which I love. I love New York City. It's not some place that I will live, but I love the city. So, like, I would never
want to live there.
Yeah, it's an amazing city if you've never been to New York City. But upstate New York, I mean, once you go up to New York City and you cross that city light, it all of a sudden turns into this lush green vegetation that you can't even imagine. It's like, man, I can't believe I left this concrete jungle, and all of a sudden, in just a snap of a finger, turns into this. And it's both new upstate New York, both the west side, central, and east side. It's beautiful. Thousand Islands. I think that's still upstate New York, right? San Lawrence River.
That's technically upstate.
Gorgeous. New York. Yep. That is gorgeous country up there. I've been up there, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places to visit.
It is. But anyways, Andrew, I know you're, like you said, you've been up, you know, guiding and doing all the crazy stuff that you do as having a full-time fisherman. And I don't want to keep you too long. I know we've gone for an hour, so I want to give you a an opportunity to plug in your social media. I know you mentioned it before, where people will follow you. How can people hire you as a guide service, and any sponsors that help you in your fishing adventures?
You know, the biggest thing on the personal side for me is Alpha Angler Rods. I know you're associated with Douglas. I was once associated with Douglas as well. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, right? Like Douglas, they make great rods for the individual who loves to use Douglas rods. They are perfect for the niche that they're in. I wanted something that was more highly specific for what I need them to do. It's what I use with my clients. I guess that's like the biggest rant I'm going to go on with sponsors, because there are a bunch of them and they know who they are and they're awesome. But the easiest way to get hold of me, like I said, is on Instagram or Facebook. My phone number is all over it. You can shoot me text messages if you want to book a trip. I will say this, though. If you do want to book a trip, the only months I have now basically is July, August, and September. My October is almost full, and my November steelhead season is starting to fill up as well. So 2024 is pretty close to being booked up. They went fast this past year. And yeah, just follow along. I'm going to try to get my YouTube page going. I got like 9 videos in the hopper, I think it is, that I need to edit and put up. I just don't have time to do it. So it's... that was my plan for January, and I am guiding half of January. So, like, it's just never ends.
More job is not always a bad thing. Well, for the most part, it's a good thing, right? You just have to balance it out, I guess.
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you so much, man. It's a testament to how good of a guide you are when you're pretty much, we're now in February. Pretty much all of 2024 is booked out for you.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that I'm a good guide or just people want to be around me, which is both a scary thought. But I'm very thankful for everyone who books a trip with me. Not every day is a good day. Not every day is a great day, right? What we strive for is having a really good experience on the water using artificial only techniques, and it's more educational based, like I said, than just going out and catching fish. And at the end of the day, we're probably going to catch a lot of fish most days. And if you're traveling from out of town, I always highly recommend booking more than one day, because if you book one day, that day could be the bad day, and the next day you might miss out on a really good day. And if you're going to travel from 6, 7, 8, 10 hours away, you probably should book 2 days instead of one. Just my 2 cents.
That's what I did, and I don't regret it at all. We had 2 great days of a smallmouth bass fishing. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, thank you for inviting me. I know we've been trying to do this since last summer
when I went there. I appreciate it, man.
No, anytime. Anytime that I'm free and you need a guest, let me know, and we can make it happen. So
that's the thing. You're never free.
Just gotta let me know in advance, I guess.
Yeah, no problem, man. But I appreciate taking the time and wish you the best, you know, with your guide service.
Yeah, and thank you. And hopefully I'll see you.
Podcast and everything I really want to go back up there and do some bass fishing again. It is well worth the money. So, and it's not that expensive.
You should come in October and make a couple days out of it, because then you can do steelhead and bass.
Ooh. That'd be nice.
And then if we can't get on the lake, we go steelhead fishing. If we can't steelhead fish, we go on the lake or largemouth fishing somewhere. So like October is probably like, once you cross October 15th, we can pretty much do anything. We can go catch king salmon. We can catch steelhead browns, depending on how busy of creeks you want to be around. And or go out and catch probably the biggest smallmouth of the year besides spring or largemouth, because the water temps are dropping daily. So it's a good time to be here.
Definitely. All right, buddy, I'll let you go. Have a great night. Thanks again. For those out there watching or listening to the podcast, you're gonna be on the water, feel free. I'm sorry, if you're gonna be on the water, please wear your PFDs. Mike, again, thank you so much. Everybody that tuned in on the podcast, thank you, Mike M, for commenting and watching. Again, if you're listening on our streaming service on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us, you know, your 5-star reviews if you feel that we've earned it. And again, thank you so much. Have a great night, everyone. Peace out.